episode of the Monday Mile podcast. This week we've travelled south to Chichester and we are at the Goodwood Festival of Speed. Today I'm joined by one of the most promising young drivers in motorsport. I'll give you a clue. He's not the first Australian driver to sit in the hot seat at McLaren F1. He is fresh off his fourth place at Silverstone Grand Prix. It's Oscar Piastri. Oscar, how are you?
I'm very good, how are you?
I am so good. Welcome to the Monday Mile podcast.
Thank you very much, it's a pleasure.
It's quite noisy.
Very noisy.
It is. So let's set the scene. Where are we?
We're at Goodwood at the Festival of Speed. There's someone calling cars to the grid now, but there's plenty of noisy race cars too. So, but yeah.
There certainly is. Now, you are one of 20 men that sits on the Formula One grid. That is an incredible achievement in itself. How on earth did you end up finding yourself as one of those 20 men?
Yeah, I really enjoyed sports as a kid. My family were sort of into cars. I always watched motorsport but never really participated in it. And then I'm the first one from the family to be involved in motorsport. So yeah, there you go. Came from sports. I raced remote control cars from when I was 6 years old. That was my first intro into it. And then started go-karting when I was 10 years old. And then here I am at 22, an F1 driver.
Surreal. Are you driving here today?
I am driving here today. I am in James Hunt's 1977 M26, so it's a lot older than me.
Oscar, one thing I find particularly fascinating is the
deal breaker
you had with your parents when it came to you pursuing a racing career.
Yes.
You're quite competitive.
I am quite competitive, yes.
And you were competitive when it came to your academics as well.
I was, yes.
Correct.
As were my parents, yeah. So my rule from my parents was if I wanted to go racing, happy for me to do that. But I had to keep going at school and I had to keep getting good grades. So that was always the rule in karting. And then when things started getting a bit better and Europe was looking like a genuine option, then things, it was basically stay in school and do the best that you can. And I still did reasonably well. But yeah, it was always a rule for my parents to, if I wanted to drive race cars, I could, but you need a plan B. So that's what I did. And I think it was a very, very smart decision.
Would you say you're a natural academic?
Yes, I would say so. I think generally, especially in the early part of school, I could get through without having to revise too much or anything. So it did come quite naturally. But then when I got to the end of school where you can't just kind of pick things up on the fly and remember them, that's when life got a bit more difficult for me. It was also when I started missing a lot more school. So that was a double whammy, but anyway, I finished school, completed it.
I've not been there myself. As a former athlete, I miss quite a lot of school. I believe, and this is where I'm intrigued to see if it replicates for you, I think to be a world-class athlete, there is an element of academic required to perform your best.
Definitely.
Do you think your academic strength has contributed to your ability as an athlete?
I think so, yeah. I think, especially in like F1 and I guess all sports, we're all very capable of driving at almost the same speed as each other. So like the little things you can do, in F1, half of the game is having a brain free enough to think about other stuff apart from driving. And I think being smart academically, being like disciplined as well, is very, very helpful. And you just know more stuff as well, just from going through school. So I think it definitely helped. I was competitive academically as well, so that's where the competitive spirit was kind of being stroked as well.
What's it like getting in a Formula One car for the first time?
It's pretty mental. It's pretty mental. The getting in the car is okay, but then when you accelerate for the first time, and the biggest thing I found was when you hit the brakes for the first time.
What are we talking about?
You hit the brakes, you feel like you don't hit them that hard, and your head like goes through the steering wheel. It's quite impressive.
Is it literally like that? Just a really light tap?
No, it's harder than that.
It's harder than that?
Yeah, it's probably quite hard in reality, but in race car terms, what feels like a small press on the brake pedal, yeah, put my head pretty much through the steering wheel. So, Yeah, it was. I learned to brace my neck a bit more after that, but no, that was quite the first experience.
Now, you've had an incredible rise through the junior rankings.
Yeah.
For those people that are maybe new to Formula One, can you explain the importance in F2 and Formula 3?
Yeah.
And how that works?
Yep. So, like the pathway now is kind of go-karts is your starting point, Formula 4, and then you have Formula Regional, which is basically Formula 3.5, and then Formula 3, Formula 2, Formula 1. So going through all those junior categories is where you learn all your skills firstly, but then especially when you get to Formula 3, Formula 2, those two categories are on the same weekends as F1. You've got a lot of eyes watching you in the paddock, and it's where you basically try to get your credentials to make your claim to be on the grid. So yeah, very, very important. You know, without success in those categories, you won't get a spot in F1. So very important, and it can go, you know, as you said, there's only 20 people. So the chances of being, you know, there's normally one a year from F2 that go up, or sometimes even less. You know, I won Formula 2 and then had a year off from racing because there was no seats anywhere.
Yeah.
And now I'm back again, so it's a hard game.
What's crazy is I think people would expect that it's a given. If you win Formula 3, you have a good run in F2, you're gonna get one of those seats.
Yeah.
But it's not that straightforward. So from those junior rankings, you went on to be a reserve driver.
Yes, I was.
But the actual time to get on the track is so limited, right?
Yes. After Formula 2, the rule is if you win Formula 2, you can't compete in the championship again. So
That almost seems like it's not fair.
Yes. I don't know. Well, it's made with good intentions, but it didn't really work out in my case.
Yeah.
So I became a reserve driver last year. So basically the backup driver. I spent the whole year waiting for somebody to get sick and have my chance. But so yeah, reserve driver, I had quite a few test days. I went to a lot of the races, sat in all the debriefs, tried to learn as much as I can. But yeah, it's not quite the same as sitting in the driver's seat. So yeah, unfortunately, I wasn't the first person that had to do that route. I won't be the last person either. But yeah, it's a tough old game, motorsport and F1.
How do you prep yourself for getting into the car for the first time? Because physically, I'm aware there is quite the undertaking when it comes to driving one of these pieces.
Yeah, the first time you're driving an F1 car, a few things. In all the junior categories, you have no power steering, so you basically spend your whole junior career trying to build your arm and turn the steering wheel.
So you've got the guns?
Well, kind of. And then you get to F1, you have power steering, because if we didn't, we literally wouldn't be able to turn the steering wheel. So the arms is much easier, but then you go around a fast corner and the G-force on your neck are probably double.
No.
So that tires your neck out very quickly, as you can imagine.
You do have quite a thick neck.
I do. So we had the Goodwood Bowl last night from when this was filmed.
Yeah.
And I put on a shirt that I hadn't worn for about a year, which still fitted me perfectly until I went to do up the top button. And I realized that my neck had grown about an inch or two. And I spent the whole night choking from my shirt. So we do genuinely put on muscle on our neck. It's quite impressive.
You were secretly very happy with the result of the fact you were choking. That means you've been putting in the shift in the gym.
Yeah, it is. But is a big neck really that desirable? I don't know. So,
saying that,
it's quite impressive.
Being an F1 driver has to be one of the most desirable career choices.
Yes.
Is it the dream you imagined it would be?
It is. It's very, very cool. I mean, I get to drive race cars for a living. It doesn't get much better
Oscar,
than that.
Let's be honest. That has to be one of the sexiest jobs.
Yeah.
Whether you're a guy or a girl, to be able to say, I'm a Formula One driver.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nuts. High five. I'm stoked for you.
Thank you. No, it is very, very cool. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, I just wanted to be a professional racing driver in anything. And the mindset was basically, well, why not aim for F1? Because you can only go lower than there. You can't go higher than F1. So why not aim for that and see where we end up? Managed to make it happen, which was very, very cool. But to be a Formula One driver, very, very special. It's very busy. It's probably busier than I had imagined when I dreamt of it about 15 years ago.
Yeah, how are you finding the increase in profile? Because obviously in the UK we have lots of reality shows. Yeah. You've got the likes of Love Island. You go on Love Island, people come out and they blow up.
Yes.
And it's not something that anybody prepares you for. I almost can imagine your result at the weekend at the British Grand Prix will have had a similar effect in that you are literally just catapulted into Starlight. Are you ready for it?
I kind of have to be, whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
I knew that was part of the job when I signed up. It's nice to have that popularity for things going well at the moment. So,
just here, we've got a few people.
We do have a lot of fans.
At the weekend, we had some British fans that were very excited about Oscar's result. And we had some British fans that were singing, oh, Oscar Piastri, oh, Oscar Piastri.
There you go.
We're at the British Grand Prix.
Yeah.
You've got Lewis Hamilton, a legend. You're holding him behind you.
Yeah.
And you walk out and the British fans go nuts. That's got to be a good feeling.
It was very, very, very cool. And the part that I liked about that the most was that we walked out and they chanted my name before they chanted Lando's. That was quite cool.
At his home Grand Prix.
So that thank you very much to the British
absolutely
fans.
Absolutely nuts. British fans, we love you. Did you hear that? Talk to me about the intimacy.
Yeah.
Actually juggling being a Formula One driver. You said it's very busy. Now, you're here today. Your day is rammed.
Yes.
Full of media. Do you have any time for yourself to switch off?
On a day like today, not that much.
Okay.
At race weekends, yes.
Yeah.
The team are very understanding that I need some time to myself, especially before I jump in the car. So normally we get like an hour before the session is my time.
What are you doing in your time? Little scroll
of Instagram, quite literally lie on my couch for 5 or 10 minutes and just do nothing. And then get into my warm-up, talk to my engineers about what the plan is for the session ahead. Just relax, literally scroll through some Instagram, Twitter, whatever it might be. Just do nothing.
You've got the August break coming up. It's your first season in F1 on the grid. Are you looking forward to that downtime or are you just still on the high?
I am looking forward to it. We'll see how Hungary and Spa go. If they go really, really well, I probably want to just keep going. Yeah. But
What's your plans for the downtime? I heard you like your cricket.
I do like my cricket.
Somebody told me you like paddle tennis.
I do like paddle, yeah.
Now that's my new obsession.
Is it?
Do you have a doubles partner?
Not really, no.
Maybe we can play.
Maybe we can play, yeah. That sounds good. I like a bit of paddle. Quite a few of the drivers play actually. There's a court in Bahrain and we spend a lot of time in Bahrain with pre-season testing and the first race. So we
haven't they got air-conditioned courts out there?
Probably, yeah. The one we found definitely wasn't air-conditioned, but I'm sure they haven't.
Aspirations. In F1, what's the ultimate? I mean, you're already doing pretty well.
I mean, the ultimate dream, of course, is world champion. I think everybody in the F1 field wants to become world champion. I'm certainly no different in that. But I think, try and get a podium. We were so close to Silverstone, a win. and then a world championship. It doesn't have to be in that order. I'll happily take a world championship first. But yeah.
What's your relationship like?
Week.
With Monday, the start of the week. You are the first Formula One driver on the podcast. How does a Monday normally look for you?
Depends if it's been a race weekend or not. If it's been a race weekend, very lazy.
Oh yeah, chilling.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, I say very lazy, but sleeping on Sunday night after you've driven an F1 car for 2 hours is not that easy, I'm finding out. So normally a pretty short night of sleep, followed by a lot of doing nothing during the day. Just chilling out, thinking about the weekend and stuff like that. Just recovering, getting my energy back, so.
What does a lion look like for a Formula One driver? What time are we talking?
Ooh, depends.
Will you not have had to hop on a plane to fly to the next race?
Usually a Monday's okay. A Monday's all right. If it's a really good lion, I'm not waking up in the morning. It's got a PM at the end of it.
Oh, you're a PM.
I'm a PM, so.
I don't think I've ever slept to the PM.
You're missing out.
I am, aren't I?
Yeah.
I reckon I'm not. I reckon you are.
Maybe, yeah.
You're missing the day, but I'm sure you were up very late after driving that car.
Yeah, I was. But I enjoy my sleep regardless of whether I'm racing or not. So whenever I have an excuse to have a lie-in after a race weekend, that suits me perfectly.
Now, one thing I'm really interested in is, I know to fit into the seats of a Formula One car, you have to be quite slight.
Yes.
However, your seat, is it fitted to you specifically?
Yes,
so,
it is.
Obviously, you're quite young.
Yeah.
Do you have to watch your diet, or is it something that's...
I do. I can get away with the occasional snack here and there. A few years ago, occasional snack? Wow. Snack slash...
Slash little burger. Yeah. What would be your go-to coming?
I mean, I really like Italian food. So, pasta is, I guess, not really that bad for you, but it's a lot of carbs.
Yeah.
Pizza, I like. Burgers, I just like all junk food. I don't eat it that often anymore, but you could literally give me anything and I'll eat.
So even at your age, as a professional athlete in F1, diet is definitely something you're on top of. And does the team help support that? Is that monitored?
Yes, it is. I mean, the main way the team monitor is if I'm overweight or not on the scales. I think a lot of the drivers have their own physio or nutritionist or both. I've got my people around me and
your team.
In sort of my personal team. I've got chefs at the races that cook us what we want.
Nice.
So it's all very thought out, very methodical.
Is there a chef here today?
There is not a chef here today.
That's
no.
A shame.
I'm going to the mac and cheese then after this.
Okay, I might join you for that.
Yeah.
Mac and cheese. I think you might have a problem walking.
I might have to get someone to get it for me.
Yeah. I'll go get it.
Thank you.
Lastly, Oscar,
yes.
Do you have any life mottos or quotes that you live by that you can share with our listeners who are looking to chase their dreams and follow in your footsteps?
Life mottos or quotes? I think for me the most important thing with anything you do, it sounds very simple, but you've got to enjoy it. I think, especially in motorsports, I feel like it's very easy to forget that you're doing it because you love it. I think with any sport, it's very easy to forget that. So always bring the enjoyment back in. Of course, it's easier to enjoy it when you're being successful and winning
when
and stuff like that.
When you're on that high, hey?
But don't forget that you loved it. The reason you're here in the first place is because you love doing it. That's why I try to remind myself, even last year not racing. I was reminding myself, even at the start of this year when we were, having some bad races, I was reminding myself that, I'm still getting to drive race cars for a living. I'm still doing what I love, even if it's not quite as good as I want to be at the moment. It's still what I enjoy doing. So I think that's very, very important.
That is invaluable advice and such a strong takeaway.
Thank you.
Oscar, thank you so much for joining us here
on the
Monday Mile Walk. Dodging cars, listening to engines mile. I think that probably has to be
starting chance.
The noisiest Monday mile we've ever had, but I've absolutely loved chatting to you.
Yes.
And I want to say to all of our listeners, I really, really hope you enjoyed that one. And if you haven't yet subscribed, do make sure you subscribe and have an absolutely, what we're saying, you can say it for me in an Australian accent, wicked week.
Have a wicked week, everyone.
It's a wrap!